Warner, and then other people in the utility accounting throughout the state. I make contacts at the accounting seminar that I go up to in Anchorage every year, see what other people are using. So I've got it laid out in the spreadsheet, like the cost of all the different modules, how much it would cost, what we have in the budget would be the higher cost of the two, and what it would cost to implement, and then how much it would be on an annual basis. And then it's just a matter of actually looking at the different modules and seeing what works together. One of the things that I really wanted was an AP automation, because right now we get most of our invoices via email, and then we print them, and we pass them around and get them signed, and then we scan them back in, and we could have that just be completely paperless, pretty much. So.
Did you have something, Lisa?
Yeah, I actually just ended up, just by chance, meeting with folks talking about some accounting software. Most of it was government accounting software, obviously. But my understanding is that QuickBooks is not, I have used it years and years and years ago, but the ability to manipulate anything in QuickBooks is just not a desirable characteristic.
No, you can go back and change anything.
Yes, yes.
The only thing I can say about that is that there is an audit trail in there. So if you're changing something, somebody can find out exactly who changed it and when. But you're right that, I mean, I could open up last year's books and make changes.
And please understand, that's not suggestive of anything that would happen, just that it's not
the
most robust.
I'm aware.
That's security that way. Okay.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
I was just going to add, we were going to maybe just ask for whether or not we need to come back to the board for a decision on which software we go with, or are you leaving it to our discretion?
Well, I could say yes or no, but I wouldn't know what I was talking about. So I think we'll leave that up to staff and administration. Is that okay with everybody else?
Thanks for that clarification, because we will have to make a decision here and then have to move toward potential implementation here, rolling into the new cycle. So appreciate that. Okay. Moving on to 922 Legislative Affairs. And the only thing under here is our lobbyist. And this is an area I've had to contemplate just a little bit. If I didn't have HB 151 hanging out there, I would maybe even consider trying to ratchet this back. But I think that's an important bill, and I might need a little help on it. I think at this point I'm inclined to leave it in. As you guys know, I've been built some pretty good relationships in Juneau and with all the key people, and you know, I have some of those offices just call me directly now when something comes up, so which is good and of high value to the organization. But our lobbyist does still serve a purpose in some of those things, especially when they get into like committee forms and then trying to work some of those angles that sometimes you can't do unless you're on the boots on the ground or on a daily basis. So my recommendation is that we keep that as is for now. Any questions on 922?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I don't have a question, but could I interrupt our meeting for just a moment? Last night, a couple of the folks were asking if they could meet Rod Rhodes, our electric supervisor here in Wrangell.
Okay.
And I asked him to stop by for just a moment. Could I just make a quick introduction? And I don't mean to stop our meeting, but that way he's not having to sit here.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you.
Everyone,
I'd like to introduce Rod Rhodes. He's our electric supervisor. And
hi, Rod.
If the folks don't
hi.
Mind.
Trey, we've met before, more or less.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Rod. I'm the one that asked you to come here. Andy.
right?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Robert.
Hey, good to see you.
Glad to meet you.
Good to put a face to a name.
Well, thank you, yes.
We met.
Yes.
You know this guy.
We don't want to know this guy.
Rod Rose. Glad to meet you. Thank you.
I'd be happy to help in any way I can. All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice meet you.
Oh, cookies.
Take some with you.
Take some.
We don't have to eat them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Everybody else.
All right, Trey.
Okay. I think that brings us to 9230. I think that's the next section. Let me skim this real quick here. I just note we've got a financial audit on here like we typically do, and we'll obviously have to do an additional audit next year as part of the transition on the fiscal year.
Who does our audit?
The EEO.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, I'm not
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes, Lisa.
Have you guys had any issue with timing on audit response stuff from BDO recently?
No.
I'm just wondering. That we have here in Wrangell had a huge problem with our audit this year, and my understanding is that is not, that we're not alone in that. And I don't know if that's just the municipal side of things or what's going on. That's why I'm asking. My understanding is they've had a lot of transition. They're having a very difficult time keeping up with stuff. So
we've had really good responsiveness from them, and I'll say, and Kay can confirm this, anytime Kay has a question, they're totally open. She gives them a call and can get a straight answer, and that's been very helpful. You know, we've reached out to Joy routinely throughout the year when something comes up, and proactively getting that secret answer.
And I know we just renewed this contract. I just was wondering.
Do you use Joy? Is she your contact person?
Any questions on 923? Moving on, 924. So our insurance, I've been talking about this for a few years. We kept whittling this away. We got into a really good program under Wortham, had almost all of our coverages were improved, deductibles were lower, and it's been very good. Then we had Wortham got bought out by Marsh, and so it's been kind of interesting. And I've noted to the board before that we are actually at the bottom of the trough for insurance. And with the recent losses all across the U.S. Over the last couple of years, I think you can fully expect that those insurance costs are going to start migrating up. I'm okay with them migrating up in cost a little bit because we really we have better coverages now, even have some coverage on our submarine cables that we never had. And that was really at no additional cost. So anyway, just a little forewarning that you can anticipate that probably in our next budget cycle. Any questions on insurance? Okay. 928. Regulatory commission expense. Pretty straightforward stuff here. Any questions in this area? Moving on, 930. General expense. We just keep trying to refine these areas here, and obviously we still have some training. You know, I try to make sure we get our staff folks at least one type of training session every year, hopefully a couple. We've actually been utilizing webinars quite a bit, found that a few of the staff members are able to fit that in with their schedule, and it's been pretty helpful actually. So we'll continue to do that, but that's carved down a little bit. We'll probably, some of this the training expense that goes to conferences and stuff too, and there's quite a few of those in the spring, so you'll probably see that some of this will be loaded a little bit more into the spring, not as much in the fall period. Any questions for
Ryan? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lisa.
You guys are going to get very annoyed with me by the end of the day. I apologize.
All right.
Would you guys consider, I see that you are members of the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce. Would you guys consider doing that in Petersburg and Wrangell as well?
We are.
We are.
Yeah. I think it might be a timing issue that
okay.
doesn't show up.
Oh,
there.
It show up in the next.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we're, we, when we try to, we try to do this across the board, anything when we're doing supporting activities such as fishing derbies and things like that, we try to spread that fairly evenly across the three communities as much as possible. And certainly we're part of the Chamber of Commerce. Okay. 931, administrative rents. Pretty straightforward there. One thing I did want to call out and discuss just briefly is we had to give notice before the end of June approximately with our intent to change our lease at the White Cliff building, which expires at the end of the calendar year, correct? Is that correct?
I think that it expires next January, mm-hmm. but the lease says that you have to give them 180 days notice. So notice has been given.
Right, so exactly. So we had to give this notice just of our intent, and with the purchase of the new property, I didn't want to get locked into another five-year lease. Wanted to keep some flexibility. So we've sent them a letter. We proposed a two-year lease with a one-year option to renew perpetually if we need to, and we haven't got a response back yet. But so that's the approach I'm taking. I figure it'll probably take us 2 years to get something moving on that property, and then that will hopefully open us up to be able to make a transition if we need to.
So financially, I see that we're paying approximately $78,000 in at least, I guess that's a total including some of the other things. So what did that equate to if that was going to be paying on a debt with that? What kind of a loan could we go out and stay within that same ballpark? I mean, if we're paying rent or buying a building.
Yeah, so.
It makes some sense to be able to offset that way if we think that.
Certainly. So I think the long-range plan for the property is to, first of all, consolidate our storage from different locations because we're, we through our review of critical spares and things of that nature, we're obviously going to need to bolster our warehousing up a little bit. So not only is it to address things that are currently happening, but future things that we anticipate. We're also, we would plan to take care of the housing component, which is the next one down here. And then of course you're still going to have utilities and stuff and cleaning at those particular facilities. So. It could be $100,000 a year or so that we end up saving or somewhere in there that you could apply potentially to a mortgage. Do the math on that at 6% and probably give you a general idea.
Yeah, I just think it's something for us to understand so that if we can see that savings over the long term that we start with that investment and get something.
Yeah, so we'll probably do that a little bit in our when we do the feasibility on the building and design and kind of get a feel for what it's going to cost and how we justify that. I think that probably comes into that conversation a little bit more. Haven't really dialed in that number yet because I don't know what the costs are.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to be one for one, but then you're also building equity at the same time.
Correct.
So you have to kind of take that into account as well. I can see our building, we could do some innovative things with the building, which we'll talk about a little bit later when we get into the R&Rs.
Okay.
I got another line item in there.
All right. Good question.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and I don't have a good solid answer for you. I'll have to think on that a little bit and give you a number back.
Okay.
All right, any other questions on 921? All right, takes us to, look at that. We are at the end of the draft operating budget for July through December 2019. So with that, Is there any other questions on that part of the packet there? And if not, I'll move into some of the other items, such as non-operating income and such.
Is there any questions? Seeing none, proceed.
Keep moving. So non-operating income, and we've got making a little bit more money, surprisingly. It's been like almost nothing for a while. And this is an area that Kay and I have been talking about, and I've been pondering for a while, and I haven't had a chance to put the work in behind it yet. And we might want to think about how we're handling our money that we've got in the bank. We've got some reserves and well-founded reserves, but we may want to consider some different ways to maybe generate a little extra revenue off of that. Some of the other firms I've worked for invested in white paper and things like that, and you know, we have a big enough sum in there, you know, we should be making a little bit more money than we are here, and we could maybe that requires a little tweaking to our investment policy and those things. I still have some work to package that up and bring back some suggestions to the board, but I think we can be doing a little bit more and be doing a little bit better. You know, if interest rates creep up, maybe comes a little bit more of a moot point, but actually right now it looks like they're going the other direction again. So you know, there's just some other very, very conservative investment vehicles that we might look at before, and so we can use our money better.
Any?
So how do you have it invested in?
Mostly government bonds. Our policy is super conservative, and some of it's just sitting in a bank account, drawing minimal interest.
Okay.
So I expect something back from me there, but don't have anything yet. Non-operational expenses, and I'm just for people following along here, I am on page 31 at this time. And it gives you a little bit of a breakdown on our debt service anticipated for the six-month period. You can see on this particular page that Kay's highlighted the 2015 and 2019 without the 29s on there anymore. DNR, that happens at a little different time, so you won't see it in this particular budget. That's why that line item is blank. Annual PERS funding and the R&R contribution, which I spoke to earlier, which we are currently proposing zero contribution at this time. And feasibility for the Taiyi Marine Access, which I think we've got some details we'll get into a little bit later. And the new generation study, we'd actually set a little bit of money aside here previously that was approved for feasibility on that. And we've actually are proposing we're not going to spend any money there. We're going to be able to use the grant money that we currently have and focus on those expenditures for now. And then a little bit of money in there for the Met Tower, but nothing real significant there. So we get into non-operating expense, liability reserves, feasibility and inventory, page 32. This gets a bit wordy. I think everybody here should be pretty familiar with what we've done with the bonds over the last 6 months. We've had quite a few discussions on that. I think everybody's familiar with the DNR reclamation that we put in $75,000 a year. We put in 50%. And Kodiak and Copper Valley put in the other 50%. We are still trying to work on trying to peel that out and eventually maybe go to a letter of credit or a bond to cover that. We currently have about $1.1 million in that reserve account, but there's some nuances of working with DNR on this issue that are a little bit frustrating. There's still some gray area on the definition of what reclamation is. If I'm going to go out and get a bond, do I have to get a $5 million bond? Is it a $10 million bond? What's it got to cover? Does it cover removing the roads, restoring that, or would it just require us to move the powerhouse structures? So that is really great, and that's kind of where we're at, and kind of defining some of that stuff now, and then how we go about it. It would be nice if we could take our money back, over $500,000, and go get a letter of credit, which is significantly cheaper than a bond. That would be a desirable outcome. But that isn't quite right yet. But that's where we're at. For his unfunded liability, I think most folks here are familiar with that. And there's a pretty good description in your board packet. We already touched on the R&R contribution and the feasibility projects. I mentioned all three of those. And the one that we are deferring. Any questions?
So, Trey, in regards to the PERS unfunded liability, in the budgeting cycle with the state of Alaska and the thoughts about downsizing certain departments and doing all that kind of stuff, do you think the conversation is going to come back to where they do away with that?
That's a good question, Bob. Part of me says that they can't do that because they still have this unfunded liability that they have to deal with. But it seems so counterproductive to me when they're cutting budgets and encouraging municipalities and organizations to become more lean and more efficient, but then they penalize you if you cut staff. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And of course, we got caught up in that for folks that may not be familiar with the PERS deal when we took over the Thomas Bay Power Authority employees. And it's got to have a legislative fix, but I don't see anybody picking up that and running with it.
And so, the state's not paying for termination studies on their own employees that they're not replacing the positions they're cutting.
So they're just doing it to us.
That's exactly. They're only penalizing the municipalities and the quasi-governmental agencies that were part of PERS and TERS and the school districts. That's correct.
You can sense my frustration just a little bit.
Mine too.
Yeah.
So Lisa, do you know if AML is working on this at all?
It's not a priority project right now, given all the other things that are going on, but. It certainly needs to be part of the mix. If we start seeing, if some of these major cuts come to fruition that the governor has proposed, if he does line item veto stuff such that municipalities are going to have to make up the differences locally, we're going to have no choice but to go to bat for some of these state requirements. The first would be termination studies, which are completely ridiculous. The second, in my opinion, would be like the senior citizen tax exemption, some of those things that are big hits to communities. I don't want to get too far off the rails here, but we, AML and the communities, will have to go to bat to get that stuff taken care of because we just can't absorb the cost if we're picking up all of the stuff that the state used to pay for.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, AML had a position paper on it a few years back, and there was a push made on it about 4 years ago, if my recollection is right. But it never went anyplace. As far as I know, that position paper and that policy is still there, but I don't think it's in the background right now.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Trey.
Okay, that brings us to the R&R / capital budget, if folks identify with it.
But there's another motion with the R&R.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we should approve the budget and then move in and make another motion for the R&R. And then we'll amend the budget as necessary. That would be the proper procedure.
That would be proper, yeah.
So we have a motion on the floor to approve the budget as presented and with the amendment. Or as amended, yes. Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Lynn?
Yes.
Baumbergen?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Coos?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I believe on page 34, there is a motion in regard to...
I move to approve the current R&R project, July to December 2019, budget in the amount of $1,521,741.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded.
I've got 1521744.
44, yes.
44, yes.
Okay.
So we will deal with that first, and then we'll have another motion in regards to, or should we include the
you could say and.
And would you read the second portion of that?
Okay. I'll move to approve the new July to December 2019 R&R projects I presented in the amount of $328,500.
Second.
And those have been moved and seconded. Trey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that moves us into the R&R. And as you can see, we've ratcheted back a bit and have moved things around also, adjusted them for the time period we think that they're going to occur. And those particular expenditures. And so if you look at the columns in the top metrics there, you can see expended through June 30th what were anticipated on some of those projects, and then what we're proposing for July through December time frame. Notably, there's a couple in there, such as the Swan Lake housing. We didn't spend as much as we anticipated, but we anticipate that is going to occur in this next 6 month cycle. And I'll go through each individual one of these R&Rs for folks to have further discussion on. I'm just hitting a couple of the high points now. Also with the hydraulic power unit, going to shift some of that money into the next 6 months. And also the station switch here. As we embark on the engineering portions of that. So we'll just start going through each one here, and I may call on staff a little bit to talk about these individual items if there's particular questions. We are on page 3-5, and talking about RR27016, the dampers on overhead line at Tyee. As the board knows, this has been a multi-year project, and we've been replacing these dampers as planned. And I think we're getting close to the last phase of this, correct?
Yep, this
Glenn?
Year was the last of those. So okay. They have actually been about 160 total, and we wrapped that up at the end of
Yeah, so we should be done with that in September. That'll be under the fall work that's going to occur coming up here shortly. So I don't think there's much new to report on that other than we're just stepping into the final phase of that. Any questions? Okay, moving on to the next one. RR28618 Housing Swan Lake. This project has been discussed several times, and we've had a number of designs proposed. And maybe, Ed, you just want to just give a brief...
Prior to Ed moving into that, and he can explain what the plan is for there for the triplex, and there are some things back in his report that shows some concepts of how that's going to look. But it's a remote site. You're going to move up to do some work out there and get things done. And the way I see it in the photograph and in the explanation, I'd like to see this turn into a fourplex because I think we're going to need it in the future. And presently, I think it could be utilized in a manner where it's a meeting room or engineers on-site facility and potential overnighting for administrative staff if they're out there. I just, as a homeowner, I figure that if you're putting the expense into that roof, you should build as much as you can underneath it, first time, because it's going to be a lot more expensive to come back the second time.
Yeah, I want to echo that. Three more walls is going to be pretty cheap for an extra room and a few things on the interior. So to me, I would put that fourth piece up there. There's one roof, you've got the foundation, and three walls is a minor part of it.
So with that in thought, Ed, go ahead and I think start with your general explanation and we can go from there.
Okay, the thought on the triplex was just to keep it at what we needed. We discussed this internally, and there was some thought that this would be the cheapest time to go ahead and build a fourplex. Just with the financial state, we thought maybe that was probably less than favorable with the board, maybe. So we just kind of backed off on it and did the required right now. But you're right, three additional walls, and if we, I would say that we'd want to put stub outs for the restroom and utilities in it and leave it one big open room. I would think that that would probably come in by $45 or $50 a square foot, so roughly $30,000, somewhere in there to bust up those walls and sheetrock it. So fairly inexpensive. If you do need it in the future, it would be cheap.
So Ed, what kind of heat are we going to have in this facility?
It's going to be baseboard electric.
So adding it to that room is no big deal.
Yeah.
Well, I would, and I don't know how we propose a budget amendment to this. If you're thinking $30,000, if you want to put a contingency in it, go ahead, Trey, if you may.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I might suggest, I mean, we're at $459 and change right now. Why don't we just bump that up to $500? That gives us a little flexibility. We still have to go into design and just to see where it falls out. Of course, we'll be coming back to the board with bids on that for final approval. We'll have to do some additional design modifications from what we currently have, so there'll be a little additional cost with that portion of it as well. We're certainly happy to accommodate the request.
So
do you want a motion to bump that up?
Yes.
You said 500?
Yeah, 500,000.
I move we bump the cost up to 500,000 on the fourplex at Swan Lake.
Do I have a second?
Not second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion.
So I've got one further question. Just to add real quick, so what we currently have slated in the budget for the next 6 months is $200,000. Do you anticipate any change to that needed at this time?
No.
Okay. I'm good.
Okay. And again, I think that we've all been that in our communities where we built something and then 2 years later we've outgrown it and we should have put just a little bit more on it. So we have a motion to up that to $500,000, and staff will go back and work on design and procurement in that manner. Any other discussion? Please call the roll on the amendment.
Von Bargen?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Coos?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. So proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That takes us on to R&R 19301, disconnect switch surge arresters. And this one's fairly wordy as well. I think I'll request Robert just give a quick overview of this. If you don't mind.
Robert, go ahead.
So during an annual maintenance contract last year with doing adjustments and maintenance on the switches at Swan Lake. One of the bushings on the switch broke and the switch fell to the ground and it was inoperable. So this contract originally was going to go, this R&R originally was going to go and replace all the switches on that end of the substation and the bushings and bring them up to about 35 years old, 36 years old, and bring them up to new. They're not quite all the switches aren't quite at the end of the useful life. They're getting close. And so the outage constraints that we face in this drought situation at Swan Lake in particular and Tyee, the risk is low to push off the additional switches that aren't broken to a future date when we have more flexibility. So we took those the other three switches out of the project and are concentrating on the broken switch. In addition, in the last 6 months, we had a lightning strike and one of our surge arresters got damaged, and we had to remove that. So we'd have to replace the surge arrester, and that would be the right time to do it because it takes a transformer outage, a complete line outage, and so to keep as many of those together and yet not extend that duration past too much of a length of time is what the intent of this R&R is, and that's where the numbers have changed, but it's all in the language there, and that will be the scope of work.
So Robert, do we have a spare for those breakers on site, or how readily available are they?
On the switches or the breakers?
On the breakers.
The SF6 breakers out there are 14 years old, so they're not 35 years old. We do SF6 testing on them. We do timing testing on them every 5 years. We do not have a spare breaker out at Swan Lake. That's true. We have a spare transformer, and that goes for both at Swan Lake and at the Bailey substation. But we do only have one set of breakers at each location, and we do not currently have a spare.
So you're talking about fixing the one that's broken, right?
Fixing the switch. So the switch is separate and apart, so the switch doesn't actually do the breaking.
Okay.
It is for only for maintenance purposes. So you open up the switch, and you have an air gap in the line, and then it's safe to work on the line, the transformer, and the breaker.
Okay.
Visual open.
Right now we still have switches at the Bailey substation, so we would take a complete line outage, which you would do anyways, but you you would have your air gap at Bailey instead of in the Swan yard, which when you're doing work, you want to be able to physically see the air gap.
Sure. I understand it, yeah. Okay.
Any questions for Robert on this particular one? Okay.
I guess, do we have a list of the critical spare stuff that we need in this facility? Are we all up to speed on that?
So that's one of the expense items.
Okay.